Backchat Studios is a part of the Acast Creator Network. Head to backchatpodcast.com.au to sign up as a patron and access all of our merch.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, here we are on the Backchat Basketball Show. Hello at backchatpodcast.com.au is where you can email us, or Instagram, Backchat underscore basketball, or something like that. Just search Backchat Basketball Show on Instagram and you'll find us. Today, we've got a very special episode. The NBL is over. Sydney Kings win. We talked about that all last week. But today, tonight, wherever you are, it's this morning for Tim. For me, it's the night. Tim Cato from The Athletic joins me to talk NBA, Mavs, everything else in between. Tim, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, good evening. Shout out to the Sydney Kings. Man, it's looking up for Kings everywhere. You know, Sydney, Sacramento. You and I talking on a podcast, two Kings.
Couple of Kings, that's right.
Man, yeah. it's a Kings-themed show, morning, life.
That's right, really.
We're going back to monarchies.
Well, I live in Australia, and we're currently under some sort of agreement where we have a queen. Sorry, the Queen's dead recently, the King now. So, you know, you guys have a president situation over there. We're not going to get into politics, but, you know, that's what's happening.
We had a King situation, and then we, I'm told we fought a little war.
Yes. Yeah. Let's not get into that too much because I don't want to get any hate mail or anything like that. So, Tim Cato, you work for The Athletic. You travel around the country following the Dallas Mavericks. I don't want to sell yourself short, but you do a lot more than that as well. You and I first worked together years ago now for the for Mavs Moneyball from SB Nation. You essentially got me my first ever gig in sports media. So I'm forever indebted to you for that. But yeah, we've had a bit of a history. I lived in your house for a small period of time when I was over in the States. One of the best times of my life. Thank you for your hospitality. It was great. You introduced me to Cesar's Tacos at about 2:30 in the morning. Doesn't matter what time, there's tacos there all the time. And this is a very good time of my life. Tim Cato, we're going to talk NBA first up. We do a little bit of just a wraparound of things that are happening. So let's go with this week, because I don't know when this exactly is going to come out, depending on times of day and stuff like that. But the Mavs this week, let's start with them, because I always talk about the Mavs. They lost maybe the ninth game in a week to the Grizzlies. Like they seem to be playing the Grizzlies every other game and keep losing to them. What have you been seeing with the Mavs, especially post-Kyrie trade?
So I have this theory, and I talk about this. Actually, I talked about this last night. I guess your morning on my podcast, 77 Minutes, which if you just want unfiltered, unhinged Mavericks conversations, we really get into the league as a whole. But 77 Minutes, it's out there. Mm-hmm. And
one of my faves.
I have this theory that like one of the reasons why the 82-game season is too long. There's a lot of reasons why it's too long. But one of the reasons why the NBA could very easily go down to 72 games is that at the 72-game mark, and that's where the Mavericks are, they just played their 72nd game. 72. And most of the time, the season is more or less, the regular season is more or less decided. You have a good sense of what the teams are. They're just playing for seeding.
Yep.
I have no clue what the Mavericks are. I don't understand a lot of the teams in the Western Conference. I think the safest conclusion to draw is that maybe they're just all bad. But the Mavericks at least have this star duo, and star talent wins in the NBA. But this star duo has not been together. Even when Luka and Kyrie have played, Luka is not right now, or when he was playing, he was not right. He doesn't, you know, I think his injuries and his level of physical shape, kind of there's blurred lines between where one stops and where one ends. So that's what he's missed five games. he might miss more. I can't say that for sure right now. You know, it's possible that he returns on Wednesday, or it's possible he continues missing games. And that's kind of the situation the Mavs are in, which is this just this purgatory, just this stasis of waiting for, you know, one of, you know, I think I can say it, the most talented duo that, you know, in franchise history.
Yeah, sure.
There's some arguments to be made because, you know, I'll argue, or I'd argue for Dirk and Corey Brewer just on the basis of Dirk himself being that
Roddy Bebois. Let's get
exactly
weird.
Exactly. But it's very clear that, you know, Luka and Kyrie will dictate what happens, not just this season, but with Kyrie being an unrestricted free agent coming up this summer. It's going to dictate, you know, that duo is going to dictate a lot about the future of this franchise. And
for
to
sure.
just be in this, you know, just waiting period, you know, like you're out with your wife and she's shopping and you're sitting on that, you know, little couch that they provide you. You don't know when it's going to end, you know?
No.
And you don't know, you know, what's the benefit for you? I mean, a hot dress? I don't know, you know, but that's down the road. So
classic.
We're all just waiting. We're all just trying to figure out what are these Mavericks and when are they going to show us?
Obviously, Tim Cato married, so can pull in that reference because you completely understand shopping with your wife. So today, well, whenever, I'm just going to say today, but the Mavs, obviously, they lost to the Grizzlies again. Dylan Brooks got his 18th tech. Now, there's been a lot of talk of him lately because he seems a bit of a dirty player, does weird shit, and he, like, says stuff a lot. I was like, that's a lot of techs in a season, right? And then I thought, let's just have a look who's got the most techs ever in a season. Rasheed Wallace, 41. So like,
I was about to say, could I guess? Because I was going to guess Rasheed.
Sorry, you would have guessed it, but 41 seems outrageous. So you and I have played a bit of pickup basketball when I was over there. I think I beat you every time. Have you played much organized basketball with
citation with needed?
Have you played much organized basketball with a referee?
Not a lot. I mean, high school, of course, and yeah. Here and there, a couple college leagues that I partook in. But
yeah, Kentucky, Duke, that sort of
it's
thing.
It's been years. Yeah, yeah, no, of course, of course. Sydney so, Kings, you know, I just led them to a championship.
So were you a tech foul getter? Like, were you a guy that was getting techs?
Never, never.
Really?
Because again, for the most part, when I was playing with refs, I was still in high school. My parents would have beat my ass. If I got a tech. Also, I was not good enough. Like, there is a certain level of good to tech ratio that Dylan Brooks is just destroying. Draymond Green, at least, like, all right, you're good. Luka, you're good. Dylan Brooks, you're not that good to be getting eight, to be leading the league in techs.
Yeah. I think I played Monday nights at Warwick Leisure Center. You wouldn't know what that is. I reckon I probably got one tech every three games because the problem for me was that I wasn't good enough. So I used to get really chirpy and I'd clap back at referees. I would say stuff. I never did anything dirty, but I definitely received a few texts. I just thought you'd have a bit of quiet, like white line fever about you that you might get a little heated.
You know, this is actually really taking me back. And I think texts, I went to private Christian school and those refs were actually pretty quick with their tech whistle. I do think I got one or two here and there. Mm-hmm. And I just remember thinking, what did I do after every one? My move, and this one never got me any techs. I got a couple of techs where it's just like, I was, you know, two players fouled each other. I was one of them. And the ref was like, double techs, double tees. Y'all don't do that.
Yeah.
My move was whenever the ref made a call against the other team, I was like, good job, ref. Good job. Good call. Yeah. Great call. And I would just hype them up every time they were benefiting us. And, you know, there's a little bit of something in there. You know, like, obviously, there's some sarcasm, especially if we felt the calls weren't going our way.
Yes,
like,
great.
Just effusive praise anytime that they actually, you know, did make a call for us. A little sarcastic clap.
Yeah.
But I usually kept that stuff pretty mellow.
That's good. I think for me, texts usually came from me talking to my team. So I used to do this. I'll do a thing where like I'd speak my mind about the referee's calls or the way the other players are going, but I'd say it to my team. And so it's like, I'm not talking to anyone. I'm talking to my team. Like, you can't tech me for expressing my feelings towards my own team.
Yeah, that was my dropping.
That was my go-to.
Mind your business.
Stop listening to my conversations. Hey, Tim, the first thing that I usually ask every single guest on the Backchat Basketball Show, it's a thing that we do on the Backchat Podcast, which is another show that I'm a part of, is that we ask our guests their greatest sporting achievement in their life. Now, because you are a basketball reporter, and I know you play like basketball every now and then, pick up, whatever, you can't use basketball. That's only the fair thing. So you can give your greatest sporting achievement, but it can't be in your field of choice. So I'm going to keep padding for you. I don't know. You've probably never played cricket before. I don't know, for some reason. No, it's a medium to good game at best. But I performed very well as, I guess you would say, the equivalent of a pitcher in baseball. I got 5 people out and only took a certain amount of runs. That's my greatest sporting achievement. It was an under-12s and it was in a grand final. Do you have anything you can share in terms of greatest sporting achievement? Anything you hang your hat on is like, you know, Tim Cato didn't make it in such and such, but he did do this one thing.
Greatest, and I can tell you're using a bit of a, you know, it's greatest, but
well, it's my greatest.
I'm gonna toss out 3 that come to mind, and I'll let you decide which one is best.
Okay, good.
I won in intramurals. You know, I don't know if that term translates to Australian English. So just in college, you know, you sign up for, you know, to play casually, and so intramurals. I won a Ultimate Frisbee championship game.
I knew you'd say Ultimate Frisbee. You're such an Ultimate Frisbee guy.
No. But here's the thing. Okay. I signed up. I only played in the championship game, and I played like 20 seconds. But I won, technically. I was on the championship team. I also played my senior year of high school. I played baseball with high school team. I wasn't good at that either. I'm trying to think. I don't think I ever got a hit in a real game. I got some in scrimmages. One time I got subbed into right field. I don't really know why the coach did this. Again, I was not good. And I went, you know, what would have been the game winning out, you know, like we were up, it would have ended the game.
Yep.
It got hit my direction, like with a little bit of pace. And I had to sprint for it. And I thought I was so certain that I just made a highlight catch. And then I look and the ball's behind me and I think we were up like 4 runs and I think the team came back and beat us in that inning. And so it's kind of great in a you know.
Man, they put you out there in a championship game.
I have no clue how that's great whatsoever. It was not a championship game in our defense, at least on that one.
Right. It's great in your own right. You can hold on your hat onto whatever you want. That's the beauty of this. There's no judge. There's no jury. It doesn't matter.
And then what might actually be the greatest is last night, Dan. Last night, in fact.
Okay, that's great. Let's go. This morning for me.
I hit a very good pool shot. A very good one.
Billiards?
Billiards, you might say. The table's a little smaller. And, you know, I nicked it, put it off the wall, brought it back into the opposite corner, and then I finished off, you know, I had one ball left on the table in the 8. Put those away pretty easily, you know, easy peasy. And I was playing against one of the toughest competitors I've ever played against in my life. It was me. I was playing by myself. That sounds lonely, but it might be that one. Out of those 3 sports, by far, I'm actually pretty good at pool, at billiards.
I would say for me, the most impressive thing is probably the billiards. I could just imagine you in a bar at 1 a.m. playing billiards or playing pool against yourself, probably 9 beers deep.
At 1 a.m., hard rule, you can only play against yourself like about 7 p.m. it becomes unacceptable. But you go for happy hour and you're just, you know, relaxing after work. You want to do something. You know, I'm on the computer a lot of the day.
Yes.
I want to do something where I'm moving around using my hands, like, you know, work on my shooting technique.
Pool is a very active sport. I can understand why you think that. one thing that I learned about America when I lived there was happy hour is not actually an hour. In here in Australia, happy hour is from 5 till 6 p.m. because it's 1 hour. In America, happy hour is like from 2 p.m. till 7 p.m. is happy hour.
It's an idea.
It's very good. It's a much better way of doing things. So, you know, the cheap drinks are always very beneficial at that time of the afternoon.
What I like to say is any hour can be happy if you just make it so.
Very good. I love that a lot. Yeah. All right, let's talk a little bit more actual basketball. What's your – so how many games do you reckon has Curry played at the Mavs now? Are we in like 11, 12 sort of areas?
I should know the stat off the top of my
no,
head.
No, that's
I
fine.
I believe, but it's 12.
It's yeah. around that, right? So it's a good enough 12. It's a good enough time where people can like make their mind up of like – probably not whether it's worked, but like if things are happening. So based on the last month and how many games he's played, what do you think the chances are of the Mavs retaining Kyrie? And is it working? Like has it worked is not a – you can't answer that yet, but is it working? Where do you sit on that?
It is working. Yeah. Okay. And I will say, when they made the trade, my concerns, the questions that came along with it, they were not whether Kyrie Irving, when he's on the basketball court, is going to be very good. And he has been, you know, just
excellent.
Phenomenal for the team. Yeah. And just a delightful, you cannot teach aesthetic. And this man mm-hmm. has an aesthetic quality to his game. Everybody knows this. Like he's a fan favorite over the years for a reason. But now that I watch every minute of his career, you know, every minute that he plays rather than, you know, highlights and finals and playoffs and, you know, occasional regular season games I catch, man, it's just, you know, the way that he uses angles on layups, the way that, you know, he had one play where he dribbled basically under the rim and then did a step back 5-foot jumper and banked it off glass. And I'm like, I saw that and I'm like, who does that? You know, and it's you if you watch enough Kyrie, you can maybe actually picture that move in your head. You know,
yep.
Australian Kyrie.
Of course, we'll claim him when we want him.
But well said. And that's, you know, this is where the questions come from. The questions are our health, and you know, he is a player who's been hurt a lot in his career. The questions are availability beyond health, because he's very known for not appearing in basketball games for reasons that are in his control, as we all know. And this unrestricted free agency that's coming up is definitely looming. I don't know. I can't tell you whether he's going to resign. I don't have a good sense one way or the other.
Give us a percentage. Give us a percentage that you feel.
Let me provide the context, and I'll see if a percentage.
You're a coward. You're a coward. You can't. Come on, man. Put your balls on the line. Let's do
so,
it.
So here's the thing. I think Kyrie might need the Mavs, and the Mavs might need Kyrie more than either side want each other.
Yes.
And the Mavericks will say, "Oh yeah, we wanted Kyrie," and I believe they believe that. But obviously, if there was another star available without the same baggage, without the same question marks, they would have preferred that. Kyrie, I don't think he has, you know, it seems like he likes, you know, he thinks Luka's very good. He likes Jason Kidd. He has a standing relationship with their general manager, Nico Harrison. I don't know if there's anything tying him to Dallas, except for the fact that Dallas might be the only team that offers him max money.
That so. Money.
Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. All it needs to be is a business relationship. You know, if both sides need each other, then it continues. And we'll see what happens after that. That is, you know, even more questions come up if you sign him for 4 years at max money. And, you know, there's all of the questions about, you know, just whether he is going to be on the court. But I do think I'll say 55%. Pushing 60% he stays in Dallas.
Right.
Which does leave a decent...
That's 40%.
You know, decent chunk for him to not be here next season.
Of course.
That would be a disaster for the Mavericks. But I'm leaning towards him staying.
Compared to where you were at when he first signed, like what percentage were you at that he would be a Dallas Maverick in 2020? Well, I don't even know what year we are. This next season.
Right. I think when they made the trade, I would have said like 90 or 95. I couldn't have imagined that they would have made the trade without, and this is just, you know, this was my assessment of the situation. I couldn't believe that they would have made the trade if they weren't very confident. And over the past few weeks, that confidence has fallen a little bit. And I think it's pushing back up.
Yeah. Is it wins losses at the moment? Is that all it comes down to? Do you think, like, if they come on a good run at the end and you're like, yep, he's confident team's ability?
I don't think I'll say this. I'm not sure there's anything the Mavericks could do this season on the court that would impact Kyrie's decision to stay.
Right.
What they're doing right now is certainly, if there is anything that could impact his ability to stay or his decision to stay, then what they're doing right now can't be helping. But yes. He does not seem a guy who is going to be swayed by, you know, a small stretch where Luka's mostly injured or absent or, you know, just by the playoffs. He seems like a man who has a bigger perspective about the decisions he makes in his life, for better or worse.
Yes. Okay. Well, let's we're going to talk one or two more things about the Dallas Mavericks before we move on to Tim Cato, the man, the myth, the legend. What was the question I really wanted to ask you about? Oh, yes. Josh Green. Let's talk Josh Green. I'm Australian. You're pseudo-Australian. I feel like eventually we're going to live together in like a big condo, like apartment complex or something here in Australia with Josh Green. So what have you, compared to Josh Green that you saw when he first joined the Mavs, you were covering the team closely then, to the Josh Green that you see now, it's night and day, right? It's crazy how this guy yes. has just come out and been all of a sudden not just a guy that like, oh, chuck him on at the end because we need someone to fill time, like where you're like, we need him.
It's incredible. I have been very impressed with the development I've seen from Josh Green from his rookie year to now. I think here's the way I would describe it. When I really look at young players and their draft profiles, to use kind of a scouting term that teams love to throw around, I think that there's a lot of outcomes, a lot of good outcomes I saw for Josh Green when he was drafted, when he was a rookie. And what he's done has been outside of this positive lane or positive journey he could have gone down. All Josh Green needed to do to become a good NBA player was hit corner threes and, you know, occasionally do a little bit inside the arc and play great defense. And this man is turning into a driving scorer more nights than not over the past couple months. And one thing that really translates from college, or is a warning sign from college to the NBA, is if you don't finish well at the rim. Right. And Josh Green at Arizona did not finish well whatsoever around the basket, which you can imagine why it's a warning sign. If he's that athletic and he's playing against less athletic players, like it's kind of a lack of shooting touch. This man in 3 years has developed shooting touch. That is not a thing that is expected or common to happen with NBA prospects. I don't know what it is, but he's shooting like 55% on floaters. That is very good. That is very high. You know, like 75% at the rim. Those are incredible numbers. They make sense given his athleticism. But it's not something that as a rookie I would have expected for him. And it does really lead me to think that this is going to become a really solid 15-point scorer in the NBA, if, you know, possibly more.
Yeah, that's right. Can just for a little bit, I don't know if you're super familiar with this song, but just an ode to Josh Green and a little sort of break for us. We're just going to jam this out for a second. Of course, that's John Farnham with one Australian anthem, which should be our national anthem. To be honest, you're the voice. Are you familiar with that track at all? Has that come up at all?
I am. I can't tell you anything more about it, but I'm very familiar with that song. I've heard it. I don't even know what context I usually hear it in. I just know I'm a fan.
It's a great track, and it's a little nod to Josh Green and also Kyrie Irving when he's good. And I was always just really hoping that one day Kyrie, in a very Kyrie fashion, would go, hey, I'm going to play for Australia at the Olympics this year, because I don't know if he still has any sort of link or citizenship to Australia, but we claimed him for a little while. When we're talking, you know, when people talk about the best Australians to play in the NBA, Ben Simmons for about 3 minutes was that. And Kyrie Irving, you chuck him in there as like an honorable mention. All right, let's talk your sort of career. So currently writing for The Athletic, you have a podcast called 77 Minutes. What's your sort of arrangement with The Athletic and coverage of the NBA at the moment?
You know, I'm their Mavericks beat writer. But I have, so I came from SB Nation and mm-hmm. where I kind of covered the NBA at large. It was, you know, kind of an entry level role. It made a lot of sense to jump to full-time team coverage. But over the past few years, and I've kind of always done this at The Athletic, I've tried to pick my spots to be an NBA reporter who's doing NBA wide stories. And, you know, trend stories are things that really come to me. I've one that I'm working on, I think I'm going to tell you about a little bit later. But, you know, in the past, I've written about general managers being addicted to their cell phones. And I've talked to players whether they go back and watch their own highlights. Jamal Crawford told me he does. And this is the best quote I've ever gotten. He does it because he has so many moves, he forgets them. So he has to go back and be like, oh, yeah, I used to do this. I should try doing that again. And so that one was a lot of fun. You know, I've talked about the relationship of, you know, you shoot a corner three and you're right in front of the other team's bench. What happens? You know, like what's the
turn around and you give them a little wink?
You know, I don't think any of them said that precisely, but that's what I would do. And I know that's what you would do.
Just the wink.
So, yeah, just
it's, give them a little wink. It's incredibly, like, emasculating. It's incredibly just like it really hurts. There's no word spoken, just the wink.
Yeah, there's no coming back from that, truly. And so actually I had a really good quote from Jamal Crawford on that one too. He said that used to distract him, that type of shot right in front of the other team's bench. And I'm like, oh yeah, because they're, you know, talking shit, right? And he's like, no. What? No, I'm thinking about what I'm going to turn around and talk shit to them. And yeah. So, you know, I lose focus on my jumper.
He's spending it before he has it.
I'm like, how would you expect me to know that was your answer? But it, yeah, you know, one of my favorite quotes.
And so, one of the great things of
that's how
of,
I describe.
Yeah, right.
Oh yeah, that's how I describe my overall role, where I'm the Athletics Mavs expert. You know, I cover them more than anybody else. You know, but I still cover the NBA. You know, we're basketball writers, and, league, and whatever is interesting me about basketball, I try to dive into when appropriate.
One of the great things I remember hearing Jamal Crawford talk about was how, like, you know, his crossovers and his handles and stuff, how he used to be able to basically trick his opponent into not knowing what he's going to do was because he didn't know what he was going to do either. And he used to just, like, last minute make a decision. So they couldn't gauge what he was going to do because he didn't even know himself. That was, like, always one of the great things I remember about Jamal Crawford. Yeah, so exactly. So what's something that, you know, we especially over here in Australia, we see the NBA from afar and we rely on people to give us information. Like, you know, a lot of people watch a lot of games and stuff, but then you rely on Twitter like Woj and Shams and stuff like that to bring you news and your favorite writers. For me, you know, you got your Tim Cato, all of that. What's something that, like, people wouldn't understand about the life of a NBA reporter and the things that go on in the background? So, like, you know, from catering to anything, like, that you're like, oh, wow, I didn't know that would actually be the case with reporters.
I would say that the level of fame that a sports reporter has to be the weirdest level, like the weirdest possible one, where, you know, I was in Memphis last weekend, actually, and somebody comes up to me and asks for a selfie, and I'm always happy to. It takes me, you know, it happens so infrequently.
You're out of paper.
During the season, maybe yeah. once a month. Happens right. pretty infrequently. And so I'm always a bit surprised first. I'm always happy to do it. I'm always friendly and, you know, ask for the people's names and all that. And then I've got to admit, a little bit in the back of my head, I was like, what decisions have you made in your life that's leading you to ask Tim Cato for a selfie?
I mean, I would do that.
Okay. Another funny thing about this isn't so much, this is more about just having a job that's very public facing. You know, I produce work that can be read. One time I hadn't published an article in a few days and my dad called me and he's like, haven't seen you publish anything. Are you okay? And I'm like, no, yeah, I got some big projects I'm working on. Yeah, I'm fine. But, you know, like, I appreciate the wellness check, you know, is everything going all right? So,
yeah,
it's a funny level.
That's right. It's like, you know, if someone did data entry or like data entry for their job, right? No one knows from their family how much work they've put in. But for you, because your work's so public, people can go, hey, you haven't filled in your spreadsheets lately. I've noticed, you know, that sort of equivalent of like, you haven't filed anything. And, you know, I assume. Yeah.
And of course it's better than it's a good thing overall. Like I produce work that I want people to read, but it is a funny, interesting thing that it's just like, yeah, a bulk of my job or, you know, like a lot of the most important aspects of my job is just out there for everybody to read or look at and make their own conclusions about.
We all get to judge your work. It's great. I want to talk about like sort of fandom. So obviously at some point in time, you were like a fan of the Dallas Mavericks.
I was.
And that's what got you intrigued in writing about the team at Mavs Moneyball. I'm going to say work together, and I used to send you really shitty graphics and you felt obliged to post them because some guy was making them for you guys for free. Let's talk fandom, because for me, I'm finding myself working more in sports. Like it's waning because you're looking at them all the time and it stops you from being analytical if you're fanboying. So how have you dealt with that? And like, is there any part of you that enjoys Mavericks wins now, or is it purely business? And that's for any
team. So the way I describe it is that, so I did grow up a Mavericks fan, and throughout my time working, you know, with you at Mavs Moneyball, being a semi-professional, and then even for a little bit, a full-time professional writer, I still had a level of fandom. I like to think that I retired that fandom when Dirk Nowitzki retired. That he was and is and remains my favorite athlete of all time. And when and I'm very grateful that my first season on the Mavs beat for The Athletic was his last season and I got to cover that. Yeah. Very, very grateful and feel very fortunate that the timing worked out in that way. And it does really feel like when that happened, all traces of that, kind of disappeared. Where the one thing I'll say about the Mavericks is even if I wasn't covering them, I'm probably going to default to watching them on a random NBA League Pass day over anybody else. I'm a little bit more interested in them just by sake of proximity and old fandom. But there's definitely no emotions that go directly into it. And I think that's okay. I kind of have a analytical approach to sports, even the ones I'm rooting for, even the ones I'm cheering for. I have replaced what I used to have with basketball with a bit of soccer. I've got a German soccer team. I'm a big fan of the U.S. national team. And, you know, those are ones where, you know, we score a big goal. I'll give out a yell if it's a really important one. Our mutual friend Austin can attest to, you know, when the U.S. scored against Iran to pretty much, you know, get them out of the group stage. I was hooting and hollering. Absolutely.
Yeah. Bit of a yeehaw.
Absolutely. You got to do a yeehaw if you're a Texan.
When's the last time you gave out a legitimate yeehaw?
I don't think ever in my life. A sarcastic yeehaw? So many times.
Okay,
a legitimate one, like it's just, I don't know. Maybe I'm too sarcastic of a person in general. But
one day I feel like there's going to be a moment where your body is just trying to tell you something and you're so excited. The only thing you can let out without thinking is a big yeehaw. And it's just ingrained in your DNA and in your culture. And I look forward to that day and you can tell me about it.
I bet it's going to feel amazing.
Yeah, you euphoric.
Know, like the dopamine that comes from letting one out, but it has to be the right moment. Now that this is in my head, it's probably going to happen at some
Don't
point.
Spoil
I will
it.
Let you know.
Don't
but
spoil
yeah, yeah, I, well, yeah. And I can't force it. You know, it's gotta be an ancient, deep seated feeling that comes out of me.
Yeah.
And so I'll keep an eye out for it. What were you talking about?
What about your relationship with players? Sorry, I will do that. I'm just going to throw some.
That's right.
What about relationships with players? So obviously you speak to players a lot and it's important for reporters to develop a rapport with them so that they can talk to you. They can feel comfortable. They can give you extra stuff that they're not giving anyone else. Is there like a level where you feel like, okay, I'm getting too close to someone or like I need to work on a relationship a little bit, because they would have that many people around them that are trying to get in their grill. So how do you balance that, and how do you like not overstep?
Yeah. So it's an interesting thing to talk with players. There is a skill to it, and it's kind of balancing the, I'm viewing you as a normal person, and so I'm trying to talk to you, you know, not with an air of fear or, you know, reverence, because you're just a human, you know?
Yeah.
But also don't, you know, I'm also trying to communicate at the same time. Don't mistake this for me trying to be your friend. I'm trying to be friendly. I'm trying to be work acquaintances. I'm trying to be the guy on the other side of the cubicle in the office who, you know, you always have a nice conversation with, but you don't see after work. You know, and I think that is, it is a tricky line to walk. It's one I had no clue how to do for years. You know, it's something I've gotten a bit better at. And, you can also see that there are some reporters who just are just instantly, just naturally, very instinctually, even very good at that. Mm-hmm. And you know, I was always a writer first, and I had to develop a lot of the people skill, the reporting, all of those things. And I still think I'm a much better writer than I am a reporter, but it's really the biggest trick to being, you know, to talking to an NBA player or anybody, you know, kind of on that level of fame and in a job like this, is just treat them as normally as possible. Without, you know, going too far or over the board, you know, overboard about it. And, you know, I think, you know, it can work. But even now, every once in a while, there's a, you know, like a little, like butterflies in the stomach, before there's a, I can't say who it is, but there's somebody who used to be a very important sports figure in my life, who I was supposed to talk to a couple months back, and things got pushed back. I'm going to circle back to the story. Mm-hmm. That was a butterfly moment. Even if I don't think the interviewee, the person being interviewed, would have ever noticed, but I still get it. It's a natural feeling, and I don't worry too much about that. It's just about, you know, being better when you're actually having these conversations.
You must notice it. Like, I feel like I've always been pretty good. I've always, you know, when I've done journalism stuff in sports, I feel like I've always been pretty good at distancing myself to feel like even these people that I have some sort of reverence for, that I feel, you know, like, wow, these are like a really cool people, to treat them like that. But I've also experienced watching others like completely butcher it and pretend like they want to be pals and they try to butter them up, and it's awkward to watch. Someone, you must have come across that a little bit. I'm not saying you need to name names, but like, it is, you, when you see that, you're like, oh man, I really don't want to be that. Because man, like the amount of people that these players and athletes would have around them that are constantly trying to think that they're friends with, it would be exhausting for them. So the last thing they want is like, man, Tim Cato keeps asking me out for a beer and I don't know how to say no. Let's talk about like traveling. So you do a fair bit of that. One of the lucky people, I guess, depends who you ask, that you get to travel different games and not just watch from afar, that you get put in a position to do that. What's that like? What's moving around and having to be told last minute you're going to Memphis or you're going to Utah and things like that?
Fortunately for me, it's mostly not last minute. The playoffs can be, I will say that. So the Mavericks, of course, went to the conference finals last year, and that I've never traveled like that before. The one story I always tell about it is that the Mavericks win infamously game 7, you know, they come back in that series. They make Devin Booker and Chris Paul look like fools. And it was in Phoenix. I'm in Phoenix. The Mavs begin their next series against the Warriors 2 or 3 days later. I probably should have thought far enough ahead that I had travel ready to go and was packed and ready to go straight to Golden State, because they're going to play on the road in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. But I didn't prepare for that. And so the morning after game 7, I get on my flight back to Dallas, and I sit down in my seat and my phone buzzes and it says, in 24 hours, your flight will depart. Time to check in. And it's my flight from Dallas to Golden State.
Right.
And so I'm home for, you know, like 18 hours, sleep half of that, right back on the road. That is really difficult. Fortunately, the regular season, The Athletic is pretty good about, you know, we pick and choose our spots. And, you know, fortunately, I you know, definitely gravitate towards the cities I like. You know, if there's storylines, if there's important things to get on in a different city, of course, I'll be there. And there's a good mix of that as well. But, you know, it's not all the games. People often ask me this, and it's, you know, common misconception. Now, I don't fly with the team. I fly my own, you know, commercial travel. It's better that way, really. Not just for the journalist ethics of, like,
yeah,
you know, if I was on the team plane, I couldn't report on anything I saw or heard. You know, but also, you know, I'm writing and I'm working after games. They're often flying. And so it's better for me to kind of spend over and have that autonomy to write what I need to write and then travel when I need to travel. And so that's really, you know, it's there's good and there's pros and cons, good and bad things. But the reason I started traveling is I didn't really travel. My family didn't really travel when I was a kid. And I wanted to get around to all the major American cities, and now I really have. And I can go to almost any one of them and say, I like that spot. I like this spot. This is what their downtown's like. This is a nice area. And so that has been absolutely a very cool thing about, you know, since I came to The Athletic, about just being able to pop around to NBA cities, man.
Get around. So I guess that leads naturally into a question you probably get all the time. Best and worst NBA city to travel to?
New York is best, but that's a city I'm trying to move to at some point in my life. And so that almost feels like cheating. And New York is New York. Nothing's like New York. I would say the best NBA city is Miami, man. You land and the weather is just instantly you're in a better mood.
Right.
Just a big fan of Miami. Least favorite, I'm going to say San Antonio. And I think there's a few contenders for this.
Mm-hmm.
Orlando. I've never actually been to Orlando.
Oh, sorry. I said the neighbor, your neighbor, San Antonio.
Somehow I heard Orlando in there.
Yes, so
Orlando might actually be worst, but I've never been. I've avoided it. San Antonio, I spent a summer living in for an internship in college, and it's not just not a great city, and it's not just that their arena isn't near anything, and so you can't really stay near it. You got to take Ubers everywhere. As long as I can stay in a downtown and walk around and there's a little bit, you know, a few restaurants, a few interesting things, I'm okay with pretty much every downtown, but San Antonio doesn't even have that. And I've also spent some time there. And I'm good. I'm
okay.
No more.
That's fair. A couple more questions for you. One, I'm going to jump to a question that I asked. So I said to my son when I was sort of prepping a couple of things to this, who's four. I said, I'm going to talk to Tim. He doesn't know who you are, but I said, Tim, I'm going to talk I think you may have spoken on FaceTime one time. I said to him, we're going to talk about basketball. If you could ask Tim any question about basketball, what would it be? And this is the question. Okay. So hopefully you've got a good answer. Why are there shoes called sneakers?
Ooh, that is a really fascinating question. And
so
now the pressure is on me to not let your son down.
Please don't let him down. So I watch basketball a lot, and usually it's in the morning when he's eating breakfast. So I put my laptop on the kitchen counter, and, you know, he'll be eating breakfast, and I'm watching it on one end of the counter, but he's sitting on the other. So he can't really see it, but occasionally he comes over and watches it, but he hears like the squeaking of the shoes on the court constantly. And he's like, what's that sound? I'm like, that's their sneakers. And then he thinks like, that they're all trying to steal things from one another, that they're sneaking about. So that was the question that he had for you. So look, if you don't have an answer,
I probably would have come up with some BS answer and just would have riffed for a little bit, but I can't let your son down.
Please don't.
I can't do it. So I just Googled it.
Okay.
The word sneakers was already in use at least as early as 1887, when the Boston Journal made reference to sneakers as the name boys give to tennis shoes. The name sneakers originally referred to how quiet the rubber soles were on the ground, in contrast to the noisy standard hard leather sole dress shoes.
Right.
So
he's not far off then, sneaking about.
Yeah, in another context, like obviously it's funny because we associate sneakers with sound.
Yeah, you know, squeaking.
Specifically the squeak. The squeak of a... But I guess in another context, they are quite quiet. It's just that most people in their daily lives wear rubbered sole shoes now, right?
Okay. All right, Louis, there you go. That's your answer. I'm going to ask you one more serious question, and then we're going to talk about what you're working on at the moment, and you're going to give us a little intel on the life of Tim Ketter. I'm also going to, and then last thing I'm going to do before we finish up, I'm going to test you on some Australian stuff so that you can take that to Josh next time you speak to him and sort of flex that you have some sort of connection with him. Let's talk about media narrative. That's been in the discussions a lot with the MVP chatter at the moment around like certain people getting more MVP props than others. But I want to talk about I want to bring it back to Josh Green, because I saw a tweet and someone messaged me about it as well, about all the love that Austin Reeves is getting right now. And then when you and the amount of money that he's going to make and the impact he's having on a team, and then you compare that to Josh Green, who is better on all accounts, but is not a name that the NBA is pushing. And that sort of narrative that the media has a part to play in. Like, do you think it's real? Is it like, where do you stand on it?
It's, you know, the media does not have a secret group email chain or a dungeon lair where we determine this narrative.
This is what we're talking about this week.
But I think on a very base level, humans are impacted by their peers, that narratives form, you know, even in your, you know, Friday beers with the boys, you know, group, like yep. Narratives form in the smallest ways. I think that media members are definitely affected by the broad narratives or thinkings of the public. But I think maybe even more interestingly, and this is the one that we as media members always have to be careful to examine, is that I think we're affected by our peers and that there can be a level of groupthink. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to break out of it. It's a very human condition. It's very human psychology for these things to happen. But absolutely, there's no question that these things, that the media affects how we talk about the sport. And, you know, I guess broadly, the media affects how we talk about all sorts of things. And so all I can do, I'm going to wrap up this answer, because like we could either spend a whole podcast on this or probably not, because it's not, neither of us are exact experts. But all I try to do as a one media member is I just really constantly try to reassess and reexamine my biases and make sure that I'm not just thinking something because, oh, well, Zach Lowe said it, or, oh, well, this person said it. And, it doesn't mean, I'm not susceptible at times to still falling into that trap. But, I think if everybody approached it, with a level of academic rigor, I think we would all be in a better place. And for the most part, most of the people I like, most of the people who I call friends in the media world try to do that.
Very good. All right. Let's throw some slang at you. And this is like the most cliche thing ever, to give an American Australian slang and see if they know what it is. But who cares? It's my podcast. I can do whatever I want.
I'm excited to do it.
Okay. I'm going to give you three words and you tell me what you think they are. And then later on, you could just drop it in comments. Like if you interview Josh or you're in a presser, you could just drop it in and see if he like piques his ear a little bit. First thing, it may be a thing that's even over with you guys. Sanger.
Sanger.
Sanger. Yeah. Sanger.
I have not. I got to guess though, right?
Go for it. Yeah. Go for it.
Fast sports car.
It's a sandwich.
It's a sandwich. That I like that.
Sanger. Like, it's like, okay. Hey, do you want a Sanger for lunch? Sanger. Okay. There you go. You could drop that in. What about dead horse? Which is very relevant considering the Mavericks is a horse. We're not going to talk about the Houston Rockets tweet of 2014 or whatever. Oh boy, whatever it was.
That's a throwback.
That's right.
Is it but dead horse? Different. Is it similar or different than the euphemism beating a dead horse?
Completely different. Completely
okay,
different.
Okay, I'm going to guess fast sports car.
Dead horse is another name for tomato sauce, which you guys call ketchup. So it's just dead horse rhymes with tomato sauce. And so people are like, hey, can you pass me the dead horse? And it's just like,
well, ketchup sucks and we should be eating it. So it it works.
All right, last one. Pash.
Fast sports car.
Pash is a name for like an intimate kiss. Like you, oh. Tim, I've heard you pashed Jenny. And then you're like, I didn't pash her. That's just another one. That's like a real 90s Australian reference, by the way.
Yeah. I think the UK version of this, maybe a UK person would be like, no, this means something totally, but snogging, you know?
It's the same thing. Yep.
I've heard macking.
Macking.
I like pash way better than those two.
Mm.
Like far, far better. Snogging and macking and, you know, there are too many ugly sounding words for, I'll admit it, a kind of sloppy act, but let's put something nice with it. Let's give it a nice title and then,
you know, pash.
We'll all be kissing.
One of the last times I saw you in Dallas was you were on a staircase in a world of pain because you were having girl problems, and I think we're all trying to.
which one?
I don't remember. You'd had some beers and you were feeling really down about life.
Oh boy, I remember this incident. Yes, I was. Yeah,
and we had to really get around you and say like, mate, it's okay. Like you're gonna be fine, and you were just in a world of pain. But I hope since then you've managed to have a pash or two and feel, you know, sort that area of your life your life out. But that was a real funny Tim Cato moment for me. Tim, let's not talk about your love life anymore. It's so funny. I've got those,
you know, I have all these wives that are taking me out to the to go shopping, and I have to sit on all of these couches,
sit on the bench and wait,
just like the Luca Kyrie dynamic.
So
no, Tim Cato's love life is, it's passion is allowed. Passion. Oh boy. Anyway,
Okay. So
that was an amusing moment in my life.
Yeah, that's very good. Amusing for me too.
What you got for me to close this out?
Tell me about what you're working on right now. So obviously you got 77 Minutes, a great podcast, which focuses on maps. How frequent is that? Is that a weekly thing?
We go twice a week.
Twice a week. Brilliant.
Except for occasional week where, you know, we only do one episode, but pretty much twice a week. Tuesday mornings, Monday night, Tuesday morning for their first episode, and something on like Thursday or Friday. So definitely subscribe if you want some just direct, raw, honest Mavs talk.
Mm-hmm. Great. Love that. And what else? You say you're working on some big projects and stuff at the moment, apart from what you write sort of weekly or whatever. Tell us what you're working on and where we can find your stuff.
Yeah, I've always got a story or two that I'm dropping each week, just kind of checking in on the Mavs, where they're at, some new thoughts that I might be having about them. One feature I'm really excited about, I think it will be the next big thing that comes out of a few things that I'm working on, is so I know that you and I actually know this because we dunk all the time, but dunking hurts. And so
where?
Every day you're dunking. I don't lie to the audience.
Man. Okay. I'm trying to be like, you know, candid and stuff, but
all these listeners, mm-hmm. all these listeners who we love, but you know, they don't got hops. They can't get up there to 10 feet.
Nope.
It really hurts, you know, often can hurt, I should say, you know, basically your wrist slamming into the, you know, the rim, which is not soft. And so I'm doing a story about that, and really it's about how the relationship of a player's relationship to dunking, how it changes over their careers. When, you know, you can imagine youngsters, it's the coolest thing ever. Halfway through your career is like, well, I'll do it, but I'm not going to do it in instances where I could hurt myself. And then, you know, it's been really interesting. Right now I'm talking or in the process of talking to some, you know, near retirement or recently retired vets, and I think their perspective is really interesting on it. So that's a story that's going to be out in a couple of weeks.
That's
cool. Really excited for it. I've really enjoyed doing it. I've got one killer quote from Anthony Edwards that I shouldn't spoil, but
no,
it's a good one.
Don't spoil
you
it.
You can imagine Anthony Edwards.
Oh man,
very good for the subject.
Man, he would slam it. Like I can imagine. Like that's you see the slow motion replays and like the area below the hand. It's like it's metal. You're slamming your hand into metal. You know, it's not you know, unless maybe people start moving to more of the DeAndre Jordan throw in dunk, like dunk, where your hand doesn't.
So a funny thing, Larry Nance.
Yes,
I talked to him. Freak athlete, really, people don't talk about Larry Nance as like one of the best athletes in the NBA. He really is.
People forget about Larry Nance, man.
They forget about him so often. You know, they forget about Frank Ntilikina and they forget about Larry Nance Jr. But Larry, when I talked to him, you know, I talked to like four or five players at this point, and, you know, everyone had told me it hurt to dunk. So I'd got kind of bold and brave with my question asking. And I'm like, I walk up to Larry Nance and I was like, you know, how much does dunking hurt for you? And I was just like, I assumed he was going to just start telling me. And he's like, it doesn't. And I'm like, wait, how, what? Like, I already talked to all those other players.
But I've got a story about
other players. But he's so tall and he's so athletic that he basically just drops it in. You know, like he can palm the ball. The biggest thing is his hands. He can just palm the ball. So there's no, you know, like, you know, pushing the ball against his wrist to kind of maintain control. So he just palms it. He just kind of drops it in there. And so it's for the most part,
just like putting a bit of rubbish in the bin, you know, a little trash.
Yeah, so there's a little teaser. There's a little.
Very good. I love that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's great.
Keep an eye out for that a couple weeks and listen to 77 Minutes and subscribe to The Athletic if you're interested in reading about. I think we're even covering F1 now. We cover all sorts of sports. We do not cover Australian basketball, but we should. I'll talk to my editors.
Yeah, talk to them. I subscribe to The Athletic. It's one of the few things that I like, news outlets that I actually subscribe to. I got suckered in when you signed, like when you started writing for them, and I think you got a little kickback. So I was like, yeah, of course, I'll sign up and get you a little bit of cash. And The Athletic has been taking my money ever since. But it's good. It's very good. I can go on the app and there's always a good story going on there. So, Tim, appreciate you giving up some time. I know I said it's going to be about 30 minutes. We're closing in on an hour. Can we do this again? Like, you know, not like in a week. I'm not going to hit you up every week, but like in a few months.
Tomorrow.
Okay. We'll do a daily podcast from now on.
Dude, absolutely. I'd love to come back on. Let's dissect. Let's analyze this Mavs season when it's over.
For sure.
It's been enjoyable as always. It's good to catch up, my friend.
Yeah, thank you, Tim. Backchat_basketball is where you can find us on Instagram. You can email us hello@backchatpodcast.com.au. You can find all of the podcasts we do. We make about 30 podcasts a month at the moment. We've got a lot of shows coming out. So if you ever need anything sport-related, head to backchatpodcast.com.au, see all we do there. Tim, enjoy the rest of your week and chat to you soon.
Absolutely.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That episode from Backchat Studios lives on the Acast Creator Network. If you want to sign up as a patron or access all of our merch, head to backchatpodcast.com.au.